Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, so thank you very much. Thanks to Alexandra and Philippe for putting us in the program. So this is Monopsin in Growth Theory, and is joint with Enrico Turri, which is at LSE and will be on the market next year. So this was a project of studying environment in which in a growth setting you have wages growing lower than productivity growth. And then, as you will see, we'll make a larger growth theory point. Now, let's just remind the balanced growth, which of course we all know in this room, but it has one feature which I want to return at the beginning of the talk, which is the constant capital output ratio. Of course, in balanced growth path, in the old Calder facts, you have also a constant capital output ratio. Now, and in the last 30 years, basically, this was initially from neoclassical growth to, of course, all endogenous growth, and all the work by Philippe that in 30 years was mainly on the product market to understand basically the dynamics and growth dynamics within product market. But now there is more growing interest also in labor markets and growth for two facts, which are interaction between both labor and product. And let me give you these facts to set the tone of what we want to build, and then I will motivate. The first is the labor share, the decline of the labor share, which I take it as a fact, and I take it as a persistent and permanent fact of the BGP. And then I will give you number. Of course, these are from Penworth tables. So we take as a fact that labor share is actually declining. But then there is the other fact, which is also labor supply. Hours worked are actually also declining along the BGP. And of course, hours worked you can measure in two ways, either per person or per worker. But no matter how you do it, basically with the same set of countries, you tend to find that they do differ across countries. The US is a bit of an exception, but they do decline. So in some sense, what this project is all about is just look at the last numbers. It's basically creating growth environment in which you have, of course, growth, but you also have persistent decline in labor share and persistent decline in hours. So there's three moments for the average country. So we want to build, which in some sense in the quantitative part of the project, we want to build models which have these features that along growth, you have like on average per year, that's a decline in the labor share, and the hours, it depends 0.45 if you have per worker, or per person, it's a bit lower. Yes, please.
You claim it's a fact that the labor share is declining in Europe, but I thought it was actually quite controversial. In particular,
no.
There's a paper in AR Insight by Sophie Piton,
yes.
Economist together with Herman.
No, France.
They say once you
yes.
account for.
Yes, I know, the debate. So I take Cara Barbunis was 2024 review for 100 years. So I know that there is a statistical debate. So yes, I take it these are from Penworth tables. For the average country, it is true. If you take some countries and there is a strong statistical debate, which I don't want to enter because the labor force is not constructed by statistical office, but from us economists. So yes, in this project, I take it for granted. It's mainly Cara Barbunis, which was also probably the same year. So yes. So I know that it's an issue, but let's take it.
From 3 years ago. It's much more recent. They fixed the bug in Carabobones and
okay. So anyway, so in the project, we take the labor share as a declining as a fact. So
I mean, to weigh into this slightly, but, so I think there's lots of suspicious, but I think the general sense is that the fall of labor share in the US has been stronger than it has in Europe. I mean, I think that's reasonable, and we can argue about the magnitudes, but I think that's...
That I also tend to agree. But so I'm measuring the average country, but so that's clearly for the US. So now we know we have a rising product market, and there is all the evidence on the superstar, but there is also evidence on rising labor market power. And so this is what motivates. So we have basically two forms of labor market that are rising, and let's see how they do interact. And so let me make the question we want to ask. First, is that how can we have a balanced growth environment in which we have a declining labor share, which again, I take it as a fact, be coherent with a constant capital output ratio, which is one of the old Calder facts. And then the second part, of course, I will not go through all of it, and it's mainly the two points, is that can a model with monopsony and oligopsony be consistent with the three moments I want to match. Remember, GDP growth with both declining in hours and declining labor share. And then I construct an environment in which there are misallocation, and so I want to quantify the growth drag, and I estimate basically and try to calibrate for the US, in this case, the consumption equivalent loss. And then there is a part of a project which is fairly large, which goes into policy, in which basically we have two type of agents, but I will not have much time to discuss that. So you have a question on the question, please?
Wouldn't a setup with innovation and market power in the product market be enough to explain these facts? Like, why?
Well, I arrive very soon about that. Okay. So now, there is a fundamental in a neoclassical growth model. There is a fundamental asymmetry between markup and markdown, and basically, and what I want to argue, that's the first point, and hopefully you take it away, is that only a rise in markdown can potentially deliver in a neoclassical growth model a declining labor share and declining hours and a constant capital output ratio. That's the point. Now, if you focus on labor market imperfection, potentially you can match the three facts without playing with preferences. You know that there are these new set of preferences which are very important in macro, that introduced by Bopar and Crusell, and which is basically goes back to the business cycle literature of the income substitution effect. But if you accept labor market imperfection, you don't need to play and to introduce new set of preferences. And then to quantify the misallocation effects, and we get a consumption equivalent loss in this calculated as Lucas did for the business cycle of 5%. And then if you introduce also heterogeneity, in which profits do not go to workers but stay with the capitalists, you have a large room for policies, and actually you go back to the Robinson idea of a growing minimum wage. So the Robinson idea, she introduced monopsony around 100 years ago, and basically in a growth environment. Okay, so now, in the interest of time, I will focus mainly on the first two, on the asymmetry, which I focus next, and then I will give you how to build a model with monopsonistic growth. But and then we'll just tell you about the quantitative part and the policy. Okay, so takes a pure neoclassical growth model in which you have market power, then the structure is actually very simple, but then the neoclassical production function comes as an equilibrium object, and we have constant return to scale, and AT is exogenous productivity growth. You have basically the output in intensive firm, which is indexed as XT here. Now, you have a markup and a markdown. The markup is over the marginal cost, it's var rho t, and you have a markdown, which is basically the fraction between the marginal productivity and the wage. Now, there are two candidates if you want to get a declining labor share, which from the literature, let's take them as exogenous at this stage, either a permanent rising markup or a permanent rising markdown. Okay, let's take in this exercise them to be completely exogenous, and then let's see the consequences. Now, let's start with the markup, which is the obvious candidate, which is basically what you want to start. Now, you all know a bit quite well the neoclassical growth model. That's the labor share with the production in intensive form. You see that you have var rho t. So basically, if you have a var rho t, which is the markup growing permanently, the labor share goes to zero. So that fits my fact. It's a very good candidate. But of course, you need also to satisfy the Euler equation. The Euler equation is in the balanced growth path. You also need that the capital output ratio is constant, so to have a constant interest rate. Well, that's the second equation, and if you take standard preference, that cannot be. Because if you have the markup rising indefinitely, then you cannot have a constant capital output ratio. So that's a great tension that you end up if you have a permanent driver coming of market power coming from the markup. Okay, this is exogenous. Now let's see the same logic with an exogenous markdown. Well, if you do an exogenous markdown, look at the first, shut down the markup channel. So the first equation is the labor share driven by markdown. You see that you have new t in the denominator, and the second one is the Euler equation. Now, again, let mu t grow indefinitely, then clearly the labor share goes to zero. So that's very good. Now in the labor share, that's the nice thing is that the growth in the markdown does not affect the Euler equation. And that's the main asymmetry. And the intuition is super strong because the markup is going to affect all factors of production. Whatever factor of production you have, the markup is going to affect it. And so while the markdown which goes into the labor market does not hint on the second one. So you have this fundamental asymmetry, which is part of the motivation to focus on markdown on this project. And then if you ask, also want to add market hours, remember that I want also declining labor hours, then they both tend to reduce labor hours because, of course, you generate profit and it's an income effect. So profits coming either from markup or from markdown generate income effects and they go in the direction of declining labor supply. But since you have this asymmetry with what I just told you, this we focus on markdown, which is basically what I wanted to point out. So now I gave you a story. I cannot have time to go through everything. I give you a story of how endogenously you can generate a permanently rising markdown, which is just in the motivation was taking as exogenous. So this is the second part, and then I will give you very briefly the last part. So take a final good with two intermediaries. So and the intermediaries are produced with a constant classical production function, which is Cobb-Douglas, and one is superior and one is inferior. So there is a superior technology. So we are in the concept of neoclassical growth. So we take TFP like in a Kask-Koopmans type, so we don't go into endogenous growth. We don't need it at this stage. And so it is superior because for some reason in the past it was introduced. And so there is TFP growth in the superior sector, which is permanently larger. So GS is greater than GI and I is inferior. Okay, so that's the concept of superiority. Now let's go look at market structures. So what's going on in the... So the final good is competitive and the price is normalized. Now the intermediaries... The inferior sector is perfectly competitive. But then there are these superstar firms that produce this superior intermediate good, which are both oligopolist and oligopsonist. So in term of in the product market, they are oligopolists. They compete on quantity with a standard Cournot setting by taking the demand as given for the final good. But they are also oligopsonist. And what does it mean being oligopsonist? Is that they know that workers, which are perfectly homogeneous, they have an alternative use of time, which is working in the inferior sector. Now, let me stress the knowledge space because it's super important. What these superstar firms know? They know two things. They know the labor supply of their own workers, which is basically, remember, it's an upward sloping curve. So you need, if you want to have monopsony, you need an upward sloping labor supply. That's a fact. And they know that you can work in the outside. In the inferior sector, and they know in a very standard way, they know the demand coming from the final good. But they take as given all the rest. Okay, so they take as given the capital of other firms, the employment of the other superstar firm, and output price and capital and total hours. Yes, please.
And capital is produced with the final output, or is there a separate production process for
no.
capital?
Produces a total endogenous like in the classical growth model, yes. So you have the standard capital accumulation equation perfectly neoclassical in a perfect capital market.
And
yes.
What happens in this model with the relative price of capital over time?
Yes, I will tell you in the equilibrium, of course, there will be an asymptotic balanced growth path, yes. Now, preferences, of course, you need labor, eh? You need labor, so in preferences, so we have the Bopar and Crusell class, which this goes back, so it's a standard utility function, but you have also hours, and basically the debate is getting it. If you have taken a business cycle class, you know that with gamma equal to 1, the income and substitution effect cancel each other out. But the preference class introduced by Bopar and Crusell says, well, maybe you need a gamma greater than 1, so to have this income effect to reduce labor supply in a purely competitive setting where both all markets are competitive. And so the representative agent is such, and so he allocates labor across sector in a perfectly flexible way. Okay, so the final good is very simple. You just use it for creating demand. The intermediary is also perfectly competitive. Let's focus on the superstar firms. What do they do? How do they behave? Well, it's a fairly static problem, but with monopsony and monopoly power. But the labor market is key. Now look, this is you maximize profit period by period. So look, the profit looks very standard, but you have monopoly power, so you know the demand, and you have the labor cost, and you choose wages. You see that in the maximization, you choose also wages because you're a monopsony. And you have a constraint that basically wages should be at least as on the labor supply. So you cannot go beyond the labor supply of the workers. And so what do? This is a key point. They do limit pricing, but they do limit pricing, as we learn all life from Philippe, but on the labor market. So they set the wage basically to the alternative use of time. And so that's what they do, and they make profits, and they rebate all these profits to the individual. And here they also have a product market power, so they have a product market power, and in fact, basically the fraction between the marginal product and the wage is basically the markup and the markdown. The markup is very standard, there is M, because there are M firms of those, but otherwise it's sigma over sigma minus one. It's what you know as the markup. And the markdown, is the famous one plus the inverse of the elasticity, is the formula you always find in Alan Manning or in Robinson. I mean, it's the most important formula that you have in monopsony. And let me point to this last equation, which is the most important, is that if you do the math, what's the markdown? The markdown, it's one alpha. You need the constant return to scale here and in decreasing return to scale to labor. You see it's the fraction of the two. There is a reallocation going on in equilibrium here between the superior and the inferior sector. And so that fraction is going to zero, and this writes the markdown to infinite. So let's go back to the Robinson chart. There is market power. So the Robinson chart, remember, it's the marginal cost equal to the marginal revenue. And what's happened here is that you have both the markdown and the markdown, the markup, which is varo on the top, and the markdown in the bottom. Now, here is exogenous TFP, so you shift labor demand, and what's happening is that basically, as the economy, as there is growth, you move along the labor supply, people tend to shrink into the inferior sector, so that's because the superior sector prevails. These superstar firms are going to take over the entire economy, but there is a total reallocation going on in equilibrium, and the inferior sector will shrink infinitesimally, and the markdown will rise to infinite. So that's the mechanism, and you get a superstar symmetric equilibrium, so all of these firms do the same things, and then you get that these quantities are market quantities, and here is a gain. Now look, the markdown, and it's basically driven by this fraction, and there is clearly this reallocation going on across sectors between the superior and the inferior, and the markup doesn't have effect. It's time the interest rate, that the standard neoclassical growth formula plus the markup. The markup, it's constant, yes, but it has to be constant. Otherwise, remember that I told you at the beginning that otherwise I face into this problem of the capital output ratio, because here capital has a key role. So the consumer problem is perfectly standard, but of course you have also labor supply, because they look like business cycle typical equation. In fact, they are. But of course, we study them in a growth setting. And so what's happened to the equilibrium? Now I go back to the question. Of course, the equilibrium tends to an asymptotic balanced growth path. So we are in structural changes, because for given initial capital, the economy moves toward a long run. And what's happened in the long run superstar monopsonistic equilibrium? There is a unique balanced growth path. It is unique in which basically eventually, but only eventually, the superior sector prevails, and there will be constant growth, constant interest rate, which was the key point. And all the variables per unit of efficiency, you go back to Solo in some sense, you know, or Kask-Koopmans, you want all these to be constant. And this is what we were saying. So eventually the superior sector accounts for the entire production, the share of the inferior sector is going to zero. Growth in hours are basically the most important thing is that wages grow less than growth in output, which was the first motivating question of this project. So this is an environment in wages, since they are on the labor supply, but the labor supply of the inferior sector, so basically you price them on the technology of the inferior sector, which is a fundamental growth differential with the superior sector, so they grow less than output. And eventually the interest rate is constant, which you need. and then also the price of the two goods. If the inferior sector is the haircut, I like to say that the haircut will cost infinitely in the long run equilibrium, while of course you will have a finite value of the superior sector.
So I was asking earlier like what's happening with the relative price of capital over time?
So in the adjustment, so eventually it's constant. Okay, the interest rate is relative to the final good, but there is adjustment dynamics, but in this asymptotic balance growth path is perfectly constant.
The cost to produce a unit of capital is just one, which is the same
yes,
as a unit.
Yes, exactly.
It's constant.
Yes, it's constant, yes it is, yes. But the interest rate is a form of relative prices, yes. So, again, and the growth of the markdown, it's actually in equilibrium is the difference of the growth of the superior sector or employment in the superior and the inferior sector, which are now to be equal to the also the growth of the labor share. Now, what's the BGP looks like? It's asymptotic BGP. It's a what we call a misallocated economy. So you have the three moments, which I promised at the beginning. You have labor supply, GDP growth, and the markdown. And you see that it's something which looks very neoclassical, which is indeed neoclassical, plus something which is the misallocation, which comes from this markdown rising. In fact, you can solve easily here for the competitive economy. The competitive economy would be the same economy, but with no markdown and markup. So just let the market do, and basically you obtain the Bopper and Crusell economy. This is, for those of you who read Bopper and Crusell, is exactly the same moments in which everything depends, look at the labor supply, on gamma. So if you want declining labor supply, you need gamma greater than one. And so here is the growth drag. So you see that our growth, it's competitive growth plus a growth drag, which of course you can potentially account for quantitatively. And that's the key point. And yes, now two things on labor supply and labor share. Look at the labor supply. Suppose you have gamma equal to one. Gamma equal to one is the business cycle statistics. Income and substitution effects cancel each other out. So this is what we studied in business cycle class. Then you have declining labor supply. Why? Well, because there are all these profits. This is exactly like the channel in which you have a static labor supply problem. If you get profits, is the famous paper that basically why Europeans are so lazy. Well, because we give all this transfer and they reduce labor supply. So this is a dynamic growth setting of that mechanism. And the labor share, if you have competitive, it's equal to one minus alpha. That's where I go back to the textbook class. But if you have the monopsonistic setting, you have the labor share declining at the rate g of mu. And so that's what I wanted. And the equilibrium is stable. That's important. And of course, it's tough to study, but there is stability that you need it. Now, fairly interesting, you don't need unbalanced growth. So suppose you are willing to accept that the two technologies have different alphas, so basically the superior sector has a larger capital intensity by the coefficient alpha in the Cobb-Douglas, then even if productivity growth is the same, you get all the results. So the last point is that suppose that alpha S is larger than alpha I, then you can obtain everything which I told you with the same productivity growth in the two. Okay, so that's, let me at least tell you the last part. I'm not going to say anything more. I have 3-4 more minutes, no? Right? Yes. So what then we do? We do a quantitative analysis, and then we do also something closer to real life, which is what happens if the profits do not go to the workers, but stay with the capitalist. Now, we do 4 exercises quantitatively. So first, which model can account for the free stylus facts, which, of course, I have to take as given a permanent decline in the labor share, and only basically the model with monopsony. And so how large is the growth drag? So remember that the growth equation is competitive plus a growth drag. And so you need elasticity of labor supply, you need some parameters. Alpha is not difficult to get it, but basically there is this gamma. But in some sense, the quantitative is 5%. Of the growth rate, okay? So whatever is the growth of TFP, you have to take away 5%, which is something. Now then, we have another question we ask is that, now this income effect comes from two things. There is partly that you can play with preferences for having gamma greater than one. That's what you need if you are perfectly, everything is competitive, or you have this distortion. This distortion, which is profits, remember profits reduce labor supply because you have a non wage income that is coming into your balance sheet. And basically, the question you ask is that let's back out the gamma necessarily to back out, to match the data, and we ask how much of this away from one, remember, is the business cycle, is due to misallocation, and how much is due to preferences. And actually, with this exercise, we get 80% of the increase in gamma away from one can be due to misallocation, okay, because worker get this profit. Finally, we look more at the transitional dynamics, and then we focus on the US, and we try to calibrate the markup, and then we ask the Lucas consumption equivalent loss, basically, how much are you willing, the representative agent is willing to give up in order to obtain mutiti similar to what the misallocated economy produced? And the answer is 5%. So that's the quantitative part, which I have no time, so at least I told you. But then it's interesting also go back to theory and say, okay, now what if we are in a world that is more reasonable, which is basically there are worker and capitalists. So the workers are hand to mouth. All they can do, they get labor income and they supply labor, while all the profits stay with the capitalist. So it's a standard macro setting, and we have many results. First, there is huge inequality, because capitalist consumption growth is faster than the worker, and basically asymptotically, in the limit, the capitalist absorbs the entire consumption. Now, but that's fairly interesting, because the labor wage flip sign now completely sent. Basically, these poor workers oversupply labor because they don't get the transfer from profits. The profits stay with the capitalists. So what can they do? They have to supply labor. And in equilibrium, basically, they oversupply labor. So in some sense, you change relative to what an utilitarian agent would do. And then you can do policy. You can play with policies in this setting. Then, one policy is tax capital income. Well, you can restore inequality, the equality part, but of course you mess up the labor supply, because again, basically, if you tax the rich and you transfer to the poor hand-to-mouth workers, you distort again the labor supply, and so which falls below optimum. And then maybe Robinson would be happy. What's the policy that seems to work in this setting? It's perfectly right. Minimum wage, basically rising at the perfect growth, and you can restore the efficient growth, of course, in this inequality world. So I think I finished my time. So hopefully, if you accept that labor supply is declining, which I think we should take it seriously, labor supply is declining, then probably you face, if you only want to look in the product market, you're facing this problem which I told you. So you end up with alternative theory, which is a bit dystopian, because you have these wages that grow very low relative to productivity growth. But I think in perfect labor market, we should take them quite seriously. Thanks.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.